If someone comes into our office to see us, the service doesn't end when they leave. From the get-go, we sort of assume that it's much more fluid and there's much more continuity than just a transactional interaction. My board of about 28 people, I have at least 6 people who are people who are on the board as people with lived experience. We're looking for people that we have like long-term relationships with who want to use their experience as a policy change vehicle and as a sort of healthcare landscape vehicle and not just as a, I'm here to tell you my story.
Welcome to another episode of Advocates in Action, a podcast created by the Patient Advocate Foundation, a nonprofit that helps promote equitable access to affordable quality healthcare through providing case management services, financial assistance, and patient education and advocacy tools to people living with chronic, life-threatening, and debilitating illnesses. I'm your host, Ashley Freeman, Manager of Stakeholder Outreach and Engagement, and welcome to Season 9, where we get the opportunity to amplify several stories and contexts that illustrate health justice as a community-led movement for power building and transformational change. This season is brought to you in collaboration with Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center at Virginia Commonwealth University.
Thank you so much, Kathleen, for joining me today. It is such an honor to have you with us. I know your organization, Camden Coalition of Healthcare Providers, does amazing work in Camden, New Jersey. So for people who aren't familiar with Camden and don't know the background and the history, please share with us about it.
We started our work in Camden City over 20 years ago now. A physician, Jeff Brenner, and a bunch of other community providers who were non-physicians got together and just said, our patients keep coming in and out of the hospital, and what we're doing is not working. So Jeff, with other people at the coalition, came up with a model to really look outside the hospital to see how to help people. And that grew into our care management team, which grew into us doing research, which grew into us becoming a real coalition of other organizations, not just health, but community-based organizations in housing, residents of Camden. And we now actually do our work in Camden, but we also work in South Jersey and teach and train and do technical assistance all across the country. So yeah, it's been an amazing 20 plus years now.
Oh, wow. And I know you mentioned that it's a coalition, right? So multiple different organizations coming together. So what are some of the services that you all provide to Camden and the neighboring that you mentioned?
So when we started, we were providing care management by a multidisciplinary team, a community health worker, which, you know, nowadays you hear about every other sentence, but then we were a community health worker, a nurse, and a social work team going outside the hospital. We were actually incubated within Cooper University Healthcare and asking people what they needed to get well, to feel better. And sometimes that was healthcare and sometimes it wasn't. As that has picked up and there's a lot more navigation and care management, we've gone on to other sort of services where we see gaps. So we created a Housing First program. We house about 50 people in the region in scattered site housing. We have a medical legal partnership that's very unique because we are embedded in addiction medicine clinics. We do a lot of work now with our partner coalition members, really helping them work together in different ways, sort of system reform work as well.
You all focus on complex care, right? So really addressing the needs of the full patient. So what does that really entail?
We have our own approach to our work with our client participants that we call coach. What it entails is a sort of meaningful connection with someone, knowing that health is a principal issue for them because all of our clients have some health issue. But a lot of our clients are also really in need of housing, or they are pregnant and need help with substance use, or they are in addiction, but there are criminal issues associated with their addiction. And unless they get those resolved, it's hard for them to focus on recovery. I mean, it sounds so simple, having a relationship with somebody and keeping the relationship and trying to help them get better. A lot of it involves then a community health worker who has a sort of regular connection with the person, and then a nurse. We have a consulting physician who helps. And then sometimes we realize they really need legal help. And so our community health worker will talk to one of our lawyers in our medical legal partnership. It's as flexible as we can be. I have conversations with people and they ask me about health equity or health justice. And I will say to them, unless you are at some privileged level that most of us couldn't possibly comprehend, you are frustrated by the healthcare system today. I mean, you are treated like a number. You experience the fragmentation of the way it delivers care, and you feel bad. You feel bad about your experience. When I talk about the things that we want for our clients at the Camden Coalition, the truth is that in a lot of cases, they are really things that most people who are experiencing healthcare want too, right? Most people experiencing healthcare don't experience any kind of continuity around providers because it's a different shift, a different provider, a different opinion. When we talk about it, health justice, we say if we do the things that we're talking about, they really should make everyone's experience better.
What you mentioned about not feeling like a number. So in practice at the Camden Coalition, how do you make sure that the patients that you serve are feeling seen and known and cared for? Because you do care for some of the most vulnerable. You serve a lot with the homeless population. So how do you keep that care in the center of everything?
Well, it's not easy, and I think a lot of people do it. I'm not a clinician. I spent 10 years at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where I saw hundreds of clinicians who really kept their patients at the center of what they were doing. So I don't want to say we're the only ones that are doing it, although for us, it's that, plus it's after they leave our walls, right? So for us, I think the difference is that it isn't that there aren't incredibly exceptional clinicians all over, right, that are serving the person right in front of them. It's that that practice ends at the moment you leave, right? And that's the transactional nature of healthcare and the fragmented way in which we all are served in the healthcare system. And so I think the way that we do that is we don't believe it's a transaction, right? We don't believe it's a sort of point in time and then it's done. If someone comes into our office to see us, the service doesn't end when they leave. And that doesn't mean we don't have boundaries, right? From the get-go, we sort of assume that it's much more fluid and there's much more continuity than just a transactional interaction.
What are some barriers that you all have encountered with wanting to achieve this high level of quality care? And what are some of the solutions that you've found to overcome some of those barriers?
A lot of the barriers have to do really with the way that healthcare is structured. It is structured to be transactional. Especially if you're not very sick, but you're on the road to getting sick, but you're not even sick enough to get a lot of attention of the health system, they have very little time for you. So the idea of being able to take the time to help people who are on the road to getting sick is a structural issue that we ourselves can't solve. But we have incredible partners in South Jersey, and that's where we really do our demonstration work. So we see South Jersey and New Jersey is the place where we do a lot of demonstration. It's where our care teams are. And we have incredible hospital partners and community-based organizations that we work with. And a lot of times, really, us all coming together and figuring out how to work together in a different way is the solution. Again, that's like right in front of our faces. The truth is that our community behavioral health organizations didn't have a great relationship with the emergency departments that were seeing all these emergencies around behavioral health. And so figuring out a way jointly to create better continuity and really workflows is really what we see as like making things better. Or figuring out that our OB offices are not very comfortable with people who are pregnant and have substance use issues. That's how a lot of our work sort of goes.
That to me really sounds like intentionality is at the center of everything that you all do.
It is. The coalition is really a coalition. So when we do this work, we're doing it because leadership at Inspira and Virtua and Jefferson and Cooper, to name the health system partners, or Oaks and Ascenda, you know, community-based mental health providers, are sitting around the table with us and we're all deciding that together. It's not Camden sitting out there as like this exceptional organization. We do come together regularly. They are my board and my partners, and that's what it takes.
And how has the community responded to you all? That partnership and relationship look like?
We have had a community advisory committee for a long time, way before they started to be legislated or required a bit more now. That community advisory committee is a committee of our board, and all of our committee chairs are trustees as well. My board of about 28 people, I have at least 6 people who are people who are on the board as people with lived experience. And again, we're not looking for sort of transactional point in time encounters with residents. We're looking for people that we have like long-term relationships with who want to use their experience as a policy change vehicle and as a sort of healthcare landscape vehicle, and not just as a, I'm here to tell you my story. That requires us to pay them, and we've been paying them for a long time, and that requires us to help them figure out how to shape their story in a way that it can be powerful the way they want it to be. That just requires us to just have relationships with people. The last thing I want is for anybody to feel tokenized, and I am quite aware that I am a white person running an organization in a non-white city, and so I do that with a lot of humility.
That's awesome, because there are so many organizations and places that don't have that level of self-awareness, don't realize the importance of having people who are decision makers be people who are represented from the community, you know, and stepping in with your decisions, thinking that you know what's best. Like you said, no, the people on my board are people with lived experiences, not an outside lens, but a true firsthand experience. So I commend you for having that level of self-awareness and understanding as well.
When Camden City first put up a test site for COVID, the people on my board who were from Camden knew that the test site was not in a good location, and they raised that. And we raised that. And the site didn't come down. It stayed where it was. For the people on my board who are people who are there with their lived experience, a lot of them haven't been involved in policy negotiation or in what do you do as a government agency when you choose a site for something and it's not the right site? How do you find other sites? So we've all learned a lot of patience with each other, I think. And we did, by the way, have the conversation where with the hospitals and with the people on my board who were from Camden, say we didn't think that was going to be a good place to for Camden folks to go in and get tested. And they said, you're right. The numbers bore that out. Like, it was people from the suburbs who came with cars. And what do we have to do differently, you know, when we do the vaccines so we don't make the same mistake? And we didn't make the same mistake.
And that's learning, right? Learning from each other and progress. And I know that there are some other organizations around the country who have a similar mission or are doing some similar work. So what are some of those organizations that we can basically use as a model? Obviously, Camden Coalition is doing amazing work, but we know that there are other pockets as well.
I would just say that in most communities, you're going to find organizations that are doing work like this. Housing organizations, Volunteers of America, when Camden is a great partner, there are United Ways out there that are amazing. I have so much respect for so many of the community-based organizations that are out there doing this kind of work. There are more organizations, I think, cropping up like ours that are serving in this intermediary role between like healthcare and community-based organizations. An organization called Health Leads and Health Begins that are these kind of intermediary organizations that sit between sort of health and community-based organizations. I think doing the kind of work that we do, and they certainly have the kinds of missions and practices that we have.
And I know at the center of health justice, it's about taking action, right? It's about seeing a problem and having the desire for change to happen and then actually doing something. So as we walk into this next year, we walk into a new administration, what are some tips that you would share with people who are listening to this and want to take some action, whether it's tips for them to personally do something different or whether it's something in their community as well?
Well, I would just say that there's a lot of ways to take action. I have worked in advocacy and organizations that didn't receive any government dollars, and there were ways that we could jump up and down and make noise in a different way than if you are in an organization where you are funded by government and government's really a partner in a different way, or you're in a coalition like we are, which means that we're a big tent and we have a lot of different points of view. For any of this work, like, you have to sort of buckle your seatbelt and have a really long view. And if you're not comfortable, just go and listen. That's enough to be a sort of person in the room. And if you decide to speak up and don't speak up once, like speak up again and keep coming back is what I would say. Sometimes when the Camden Coalition is a new organization and we haven't had experience in a particular place, you know, I say we go in and we don't say anything because we haven't yet earned the right to speak. Figure out where you are and all that and find an issue and stick with it. Stick with it because none of these things have gotten solved. These are long-term things. They are not like short wins.
So being in it for the long haul.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You all obviously do work on behalf of patients and patient advocacy. And I think that that's just really valuable. And for patients to continue to speak up and talk about what isn't working for them. And as I said, it is not just our clients at the Camden Coalition. It is you, it is me, it is our relatives. We have constructed a system that makes a lot of people feel bad. We've got some work to do.
I'm Ashley Freeman, and thanks for listening to this episode of Advocates in Action. If you haven't yet, please subscribe, review, and share this podcast. Your support is greatly appreciated. We enjoy connecting with our listeners, so please visit our website for show notes, resources, and ways to engage with us on social media. Thanks for listening.